In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha. Hey, I'm Jared.
And I'm Greg.
And this is Modern Apocrypha.
Welcome, everybody.
So today I actually want to go over an old topic. And this is because I've been talking to people over the past weeks or so, and I've wanted a place to point to where I give my take on what place myth has and how the world is laid out as far as society and politics and everything. And I didn't have one. So let me just dive right in and sort of give the overall layout of that. And then we can kind of get into some of the details. So the way I like to put it to people is that politics is downstream of culture and culture is downstream of faith. The first half of that comes from Andrew Breitbart. He laid that out a number of years ago before he died. He was the founder of Breitbart Media, and he actually had, you know, back when he was alive, Breitbart was a lot more trustworthy in my eyes than it is now, though it's not bad now. It's not like it's, you know, it's nowhere near as bad as CNN or MSNBC or one of those. They do have their sort of built-in biases, and that's fine. We all do. But he was the one, it was him who laid out the idea that politics is sort of defined by the culture around it. So the way we, well, and then the whole culture is downstream of faith thing is one that I added on. I know other people have said similar things. It isn't just my idea, but the idea being that what we believe, what we hold true, so our ideology defines the way we live. It creates the culture around us, and that then determines the playing field of politics. Because, you know, right now, if I were to propose that, think of the craziest thing you can, that women should not have the right to vote in America on a political stage, that would be totally unacceptable to a lot of the people who, you know, hear me, that they would think that's a kooky, crazy idea. And the reason for that is because the culture has shaped the politics. And I'm not saying that.
Yeah, here's another one that's kind of on that same level that we don't do and would think would be odd at this moment in time. And that would be testing to vote to prove that you're not an idiot. That's been normal. Right? That's certainly been something that people have thought was normal.
Yeah, well, or making it so that in order to vote, you have to own property. That was actually the case when America was originally founded. And for the record, I am not actually for not having women voting. What I would be for, if I had a choice, would be having something like, you have to be a business owner with of a business that employs at least 5 people, but not a CEO or something like that. You have to actually own a working business that serves people in order to vote. If I had a choice, that's the direction I would go. The only reason being, proving that people are responsible members of society, the way we used to think to do that when America was founded was to people who had property. But bringing this back, the whole point is that the culture we live in, the ideas that are common around us shape what is acceptable to people as far as, you know, political ideas. So, you know, the idea of a socialist sort of society is something that's way more acceptable today than it was 150 years ago. It was sort of pushed into acceptability during the early 1900s more, and it has become less acceptable since then. So there was actually a viable American Socialist Party back in the early 1900s. And today that's kind of a joke, because we in America don't really put up with socialism as it.
We're actually not that off of socialism. Communism, fascism are the things that destroyed the socialist construct. Because really, if you are working hard and offering charity and taking care of your neighbor, you're being pretty socialist.
It's no, you're just, not.
Really.
Socialism, by definition, is government ownership of things and redistribution via government means. Charitable giving, and this is a problem, actually. The modern definition of socialism has nothing to do with charitable giving or working hard. It's that it's sort of a soft version of communism. It's like from each according to their ability, to each according to their need, and do that via a government redistribution program. That is what socialism is. And we're more against that now than we were in the early 1900s, but not as much against it now as we were once upon a time. So that's just interesting. But the point is still that it's the culture that determines which of those ideas can come into a political field, right?
Sure.
Okay. So with the groundwork laid there, then we get to things like myth. And the way I put it is, myth lives between faith and culture, and it points back to the faith we stand on, back to our most dearly held ideas, and forward to lead the way for the culture. So our myth is giving us, it's giving us basically a window into the future to see where we're going. People do this without even realizing it. When I started the Twitter account for Energemetra 6, there was a guy who said, some guys choose one book and make it their whole personality. For me, it's Starship Troopers. And he's acknowledging a really critical point there, even though it's kind of a funny way of doing it. It's like what we hold dear as a story determines the way we live. You were going to say something.
I was looking at our current myth, what we're currently looking at as a myth, in The Matrix and the Blue Pill and being stuck in Plato's cave, essentially.
Yeah.
And that doesn't seem like looking forward. That seems like looking at an ethereal representation of the current and the recent past.
You know, what's really interesting about The Matrix, and this is actually, I'm actually supposed to do a show about The Matrix with somebody in the not too distant future.
Sure. Like I said, it's a ubiquitous myth for us in this moment.
Because it is.
Plato's cave and the dialectic has got us so confused.
Well, and here's the fun thing about The Matrix is it's totally Gnostic. It is based on Gnostic ideas. And what I mean by that is, well, we'd actually have to go into what Gnosticism is, but you know, the whole basis of things in mystery religion, where you have a left-hand path that's a light path and a right-hand path that's a dark path. And if they get too out of balance, you wind up with a world in chaos and you have to wake up from, well, the whole idea of secret knowledge being a big part of the world, and you have to wake up from your sort of sleeping in this world and come out of Plato's cave, as you were saying, and all of that. This is all very, very Gnostic stuff.
Well, and I thought the big difference was something that was Gnostic was not that we put information out there for you to remove the scales from your eyes and see, but we hide information from you that if you don't pay whatever we say, then you don't get. The Gnostics, like the Scientologists, have levels that you got to pay up into, not that all the information is there and you just have to remove the scales from your eyes.
Right, right. Well, okay, so in the Matrix case, they aren't removing the scales from their own eyes. They actually have to take the red pill. They actually have to be woken up by other people in order to, and the information isn't just there. They actually have to go looking for it, and they kind of climb that ladder of secret knowledge in order to get where they're going.
Right, but the Gnostic demands that it's not just that it's, that you don't understand it. It's hidden from you. It's not there.
Right. And so, as you say, this is one of the big myths right now is exactly that. And so the way I look at the world, there's a quote, and I'll get to the quote later because it encapsulates this pretty well. But the idea is that we as human beings really need stories in order to guide us. And we may not realize it. And it's an interesting problem because as conservatives, we sort of just by default accept the Christian narrative, the story of Christ and his life and God and all of this as being the backdrop narrative for our world, where the left doesn't do that and the Gnostics don't do that. And so it ends up being the case that a lot of conservatives aren't all that interested in the myths or the culture because they have their myth. They have accepted the myth. They live it. And everybody else is kind of out searching. They don't have their myth. And the story of Jesus Christ changed the world more than just about anything else in history ever has. You know, he was alive for like 33 years. Three of those were active ministry. And the story of those 3 years of active ministry, along with just a little snippet of his early life, have done more to change the world than any other single thing in history, by far. It's that story that is the most critical part of our human narrative. And we in the modern day have lost sight of that. And that's partly why society has gone the direction it's gone. So we see our politics is in disarray. It's in a terrible place. We all know it. And so many people are focusing on this political battle. It's like if Trump could just win, it would fix everything. And the answer is no, it would not fix everything. In fact, it probably wouldn't fix much of anything, because in order for things to be fixed, we actually have to change the culture and the ideology that shape the politics. Because 10 years from now,
I don't know that I would entirely agree with that statement, because at some point or another, if politics is downstream of culture, if the politics is showing signs of being swayed, then that would mean that the culture has been already swayed, which means you've already won.
Right, exactly. No, I agree.
So it would be that if you see the sign, then you've won.
Right. What I'm saying is that we've lost, and we can see the signs of that in the politics. That
under the circumstance of your chosen candidate winning?
Well, of course, because we have... Do we have a race with Kamala and Trump today, or do we have a race with Thomas Jefferson and John Adams today? Because, you know, the people who were originally running for office, whichever ones of them won the battle, they did not tear down the American system, because the whole system was healthier and the people who were put in as candidates were better. And that has been true even down through, like, you know, 50, 100 years ago, the candidates we had, and I should say a little further back than that, but the point is...
Bush Senior. We had good quality, intelligent, even if they were psychopathic, candidates until Bush Senior.
Well, and I, you know, the more I learn about this, the more I wonder, but even still, there is no way a guy like Calvin Coolidge could run today. There is no way, and it's Silent Cal, no way. He was basically a really great president in a lot of ways because he didn't do anything. He just ran the government the way he was supposed to and didn't act as a great big figurehead. And that isn't even possible today. People are looking to politics for their savior today. And that is, whether it's the left or the right, they look to politics for their savior, for the person who they admire and adore and expect to lead them. And that is an indication of how far the culture has fallen. So even if our candidate wins, let's actually ask the question. If Trump were to win, what ideas is he going to stand up for? Is he going to stand up for traditional marriage? Is he going to stand up for, you know, the sanctity of life in the womb up until birth? Is he going to stand up? No, he's not. He is a degenerate asshole in compared to any standard of morality that I would hold up. Trump is a total degenerate.
Why would I even care about that in my politician? I don't look for him to be my pastor. I want no new wars. I want fewer regulations. I want more freedom to act on my own. I don't care what he says about what's good, bad, or ugly.
Okay.
Just illegal or not.
All of what is made illegal is a legislation of morality. Every law is a legislation of morality at some level. And so when you look at the people who are standing up for, you know, your party, whatever, compared to the last guy and the guy before and the ideas they espouse, you can kind of see what moral ground those people stand on based on the ideas they hold true. Obama ran on heterosexual marriage. Obama did. So we see a degeneration over just a decade or so of the political sphere to the point where the people who are running hold up moral ideas that are worse than the people who were running 10, 20 years ago. It's a total degeneration of politics is what I'm talking about. You can just see it in every way. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'm not looking, frankly, let's actually pull this out real quick. I don't want to get too lost down this rabbit trail, but so you were saying something about not wanting them to be your pastor, and you're right. I agree with this. They're not your pastor. On the other hand, the ideas that they hold are an indication of where the political battle is right now and where the culture is right now. What we need right now as a country is to get the national government out of our lives, because we have an overbalance toward tyranny and a lack of personal freedom and individuality overall as a country. So I agree with you in that sense. I don't want people to be legislating a lot of those things on a national level. I want them kicked back to the states, kicked completely out of government, because we've got an overbalance. But the basic point is just that when you look at the positions these people hold, you can see what the degeneration of the culture is between now and any given point in the past based on those moral markers. Does that make sense?
I understand what you're saying. I would say even to a stronger version of it, they're not making laws based on moral perspectives, that they are spinning it. So they think people like this. They think people want that. They think people want this. And that's right in their sort of pandering kind of way.
They're that's feeling what I'm like, saying. What they're pandering to, what the positions that they're holding tell you where the culture is located at the moment, because those views are the ones that they think people are wanting them to hold, right?
Well, and that was what the natural state of things might have been before the creation of the New York Times, whatever that was, the CIA's real push to give people false information and to wag the dog, right? And so once you get wagging the dog as a concept, and that's well over 100 years old, then it's no longer about culture pushing the politics. It's more about the politics lying to the people so they feel a certain way, so they can get what they want.
Right. I agree with you there. But the overall point I'm making, and that was a great point to make, by the way, the overall point I'm making, though, is you can tell by the way they're lying or the way they're positioning themselves, because I don't think it's all lies. I think that people who actually believe those things tend to end up in those positions more or less, whether they take on those beliefs as a matter of holding the position or they espouse them before they get there, doesn't really matter. The point is that they are positioning themselves in these places because they think these things are morally acceptable. You can use that as a barometer for how screwed up the culture is. The positions that they're espousing tell you what people want to hear, right? So that is, politics is still shaped by the culture, whether or not the political playing field is being manipulated. The point is still valid. And so backing up then, in order to deal with the cultural problem we have, what do we have to do? Because the only influence on culture that I have ever seen that is positive And here we have to pull in the enemy, right? Because the enemy is active in the world. We have real spiritual beings who are creating a dialectic, who are creating a situation where they are pulling people toward their desired end, which is, well, it could be a number of things, but if you read books like Return of the Gods by Jonathan Cahn, you can get a great idea of what is actually going on there. But the idea is you've got the enemy creates two sides to an argument, and they're pulling people in their direction via this argument. And the only way I've ever seen that that gets defeated is when the people of a country actually believe in and believe on Jesus Christ and look to the Creator as God and fear Him and keep His commands. That is the only way I've ever seen a culture actually become more healthy. And so what do we need to do to get there? Because there are different elements to that. So for example, if you put out a kid's book that is a good, healthy kid's book based in Christian principles, there is something inside of each of us that is going to go, yeah, it's fine if my kids read this, because unless people are have become really twisted to the point where they actually hate God, which is still comparatively rare, having people do that, then it looks like a healthy thing to have their kids exposed to. And that is how you build up good moral fabric in a society, is with a million of these little things all stacked on top of each other where they create a good influence. And, you know, we've had a lot of those things destroyed, from the traditional nuclear family to our general culture, where when you go to a movie, what is in a PG-rated movie today is something that would have been considered R-rated 50 years ago, because it's just so depraved. Well, okay, it's those set of things all stacked on top of each other that let us build a healthy culture. And a lot of that is based on people believing in Jesus Christ and believing in God, right?
Absolutely.
So what do we need to do for that? Well, obviously we need to be showing Him to everyone around us. But the other thing we need to be doing is we need to not lose sight of what's important in this battle. And as Christians, what's important is first showing other people Christ. That is the most important thing. And second is building a healthy culture, is creating an environment where things are better than. And so when you have things like your local church is offering a program where kids without dads can come and spend time with you as a man, because you are being a father figure in their life. My church actually had a thing they were doing to that end a year or so ago. Fathers in the Field, it was called. And when you have that opportunity, that's a great way to build up the culture. You can make a huge difference in somebody's life when you act as a father figure to somebody who doesn't have one. You know, I'm writing these books. In my opinion, this is what I focus on, because this is sort of my my passion, my mission, my call, right? But that is that when we have stories that are dear to us, and they resonate with us, it leads us in a good direction if they're a good story, and it leads us in a bad direction if they're a bad story. The Chronicles of Narnia was a much better story than The Matrix in so many ways, in terms of leading people in good directions. The Matrix speaks to us in the modern day so much more because things are so Gnostic. And waking up from the programming, the factory settings that society puts into us, really is something that we need to be, I don't know, you know, I was just been thinking about this lately. That's something that really isn't in the book that I'm writing. And it's something that I wish I could include and may find a way to include in my stories in future, because it's such a universal experience for people. You start to wake up and you realize you've been lied to your whole life. And it's the dark.
I can't imagine that it's a new thing. I mean, what else could have been being described by removing the scales from your eyes? What else could you have been describing?
Well, you're right. but
I mean, that's not true. There's more that he's describing there, because it is a deeper spiritual awakening than just.
Yeah, but you're still making a good point there. And so there are two layers to that, or three, right? So you got, on the one layer, you've got people who are operating in normie land, who actually sort of take the narrative at face value and believe the lies that are common and whatever. Then you have the sort of great awakening waking up, the false light awakening that is becoming more and more common through our society, where people wake up to how the institutions have been lying to them, and the left has been lying to them, and the organs of control in our society are corrupt, which most people didn't really see that for the longest time. It's still only like 15% of society that realizes that the country's run by elite pedophile gangs. It's only like 15% that actually agree to that. That's crazy, because it's obviously true. I mean, if you just take the least time to look, those organs of control are controlled by those people. So there's that level of awakening. Then there's the deeper level of awakening, where you wake up to the spiritual realities of things, and God takes the scales off your eyes, and you see clearly that we live in a spiritual battle all the time, and that those two agendas, the light and dark agenda that are in front of us, aren't necessarily, it isn't like one's good and one's bad. It's like one is a light good bad and the other is a dark bad, and they're both headed in a direction that's controlled by the enemy, and that's not good. And so you're right, but there are two levels to that, right?
Sure. There's one other topic on the production of stories and things that I see that I want to bring up here. I'm not sure if this is a good spot to put it.
How about we take a quick break and then come back and do it after the break? Is that all right?
Sure. That's a perfect time. I'll take a little note here so I can get it out.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, everybody. Well, let's go ahead and take a break. We're right about there. So we'll be back in a minute.
Back in a minute, everyone.
As you can probably tell from the backdrop, there are new things happening here. This is my new sound studio for recording audiobooks. It's not quite done, but it's done enough that I can record an ad in it, and that's exciting. I also have an anthology that I'm just finishing now. It should be coming out real soon. I have book 2 in the Bright Star series is basically finished, other than some professional edits and the publishing, and I'm pushing on that pretty hard. I'm hoping that there will be news on that one in the near future. When it comes to audiobooks, I'm planning on recording both the anthology and Bright Star. And folks, I need support and help now more than ever. Bright Star is doing just fine. I'm perfectly happy with it, and I am expanding both my ground game and my marketing game, and things are just growing. But the best recommendation is a recommendation from a friend. So if you like what you see on Modern Apocrypha, take this as a recommendation to you. Bright Star is worth your time. And if you've read it and you like it, recommend it to somebody. Help me out getting the word out about this series. And be on the lookout. More's coming soon. Energemetra6.com, e6universe.com, promo code Israel, 10% off.
Hello, Modern Apocrypha listeners. I'd like to take a moment to lift up North Arrow Coffee. If you're like me, you enjoy quite a bit of coffee, and North Arrow has a lot of really good coffees. But they're also following their very own North Star to support pro-life organizations. At North Arrow, 15% of all sales go towards life, not just for a limited time, but for a reason. So, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can use the code E6 at the North Arrow web store and save 10% today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everyone.
So, you had said you had one thing that you wanted to go into. Let's go ahead and do that.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring up this space of myth in the idea that it follows a hero, right? That the myth is the story of the hero. It's the good. We're describing what good is from our perspective, if that makes sense. And what we've got in the tie-ins between Chronicles of Narnia, The Matrix, Captain America, there's a good guy, right? And then what we've seen, whether it's Lobo is like the classic comic book character that's just nasty on purpose all the time. That's the character. He is just satanic nastiness. He looks like Kiss the Band, and he's just nasty. If you were to take something like The Watchmen, which is a comic book movie, again, it's taking what should be good and just making it worldly and nasty. Right? That's the point. There is no spiritually good. It's all worldly and dirty. And that's that difference of myth feels like an attack out there that we've got anti-heroes. They call it realism or something. It's mislabeled as dirty myth, right? The gritty myth, but or also anti-hero, right? The smartest man in the planet was the only thing that could battle the strongest man in the planet, and he did it by killing his own men. Way to go, Watchmen. That's a great myth. No, it's not.
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking about the sort of the way that myth has gone awry.
Not only just the way that myth has gone awry, but been misdefined as the most popular story, right? Whatever the hit movie is not the myth. That's a misunderstanding.
The myth is sort of a misnomer here, because you can't point to one thing and call it the myth. You can say that this is a popular myth at the moment. This is one of the major influences at the moment. And whether that is Marvel or Star Wars or The Matrix or whatever, they all have a part in that tapestry, right? And
I do feel like there's like one myth against one myth against one myth. The myths being forgiveness and strength from community and weakness, as opposed to individual strength and tyranny. If I watch Asian media, they're very much about strength first, and I'm like, what am I watching? This is a strange culture, right?
Okay, so those are themes. Those are ideas that go into the myths, but the myth itself is an individual story.
Okay.
And so, yeah, there may be dominant themes at any given time or in any given culture. You may have different themes that are dominant, but you know, I loved Star Wars as a kid, but I also liked Ender's Game, and I liked, you know, there were four or five other stories that I really liked, and they all influenced me very much, but it isn't like there was just one myth. Now there, as the one guy was talking about on Twitter, there is that sort of what would you call it? That there are people who fasten onto one sort of myth, one story, and make it, and it becomes really strong for them. And, you know, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But the point is that you can't say that one myth is the only myth unless you are a Christian and put the myth of Christ first, or unless you have like the Gnostic gospel as your most important myth, because then everything kind of sorts itself into a hierarchy under that. So then you could say that that is the dominant myth. And for a lot of Christians, they do that without even realizing it.
And well, I don't mean so much that there's a single story that does it. It's that the theme of the story, as you say, is that theme of community building, self-sacrifice, you know, strength through that, as opposed to building your muscle, building your intelligence, building your weapon base. Those sorts of strengths are what I hear from non-Judeo-Christian societies as the sources of strength.
Right, and yes, I agree with you. I mean, so I do see that.
I guess I am defining a theme and not the myth as the story, right? But
right.
Which theme are we following? The good guy theme or the acceptance of reality theme, which you could never really know, or the enemy, right? Are we following the power for power's sake?
Well, or individuality for individuality's sake, freedom for freedom's sake, you know, all of these
things. That's such a strange thing. Sorry to break in. The individuality for individuality's sake, I'm coming to realize, is not what we think it is. That is young people looking for a partner. Look, I'm here. Don't pay attention to the noise. I stand. I'm an individual. I'm so sure that so much of it that we're getting is just young people looking for a partner.
Okay, so that is one of the motivators to go there. But you know what Satan's original sin was, right? It was pride. And when we as human beings move toward that original sin, that is sort of individuality for its own sake. It's like saying, me because me.
I don't feel like that is what I'm getting from people whenever they have their individualistic verbiage. What they're, again, the difference between the true, like, most pure version of it being satanic and the what people do and the word they're using.
Yeah.
I think that's a dialectic misunderstanding that people don't want to be individual.
Well, okay, so not wanting to express your individuality, but this sort of rugged individualist sort of trope that is part of the American ethos has its good side, but it also tends to lead you toward that original sin of Satan, which was pride, which was moving towards something that is not good, right? And so that's more what I'm referring to here.
Sure. But again, we always try to find that on the spectrum of balance. If you were completely non-individualistic, then you'd just be Catholic. You're just going to follow what they say, tell you to do. You're going to, you know, that, whatever.
Okay, so that's... I don't know. I don't think that you can talk about a balance and be correct ever. I think that you have to find the correct end to pursue. And when you're moving in the right direction, it looks like you've got a good balance, but you're actually pursuing something wholeheartedly. That's the way I look at it. So it's like when we talk about this individualistic thing, God did not create us to be little robots. He did not make us to... And this is actually an argument that I have with a lot of bad Christian theology. God did not make us to be exactly like Jesus. That is not. He made us to have the sum of the same characteristics. And those characteristics are things that we have to let him instill in us. But he did create us to be an individual person with our own attributes and our own strengths and good things about us, and that individuality is it was intended from the beginning. That's actually good. And so when we pursue being who God wants us to be, that means there are things about us that have been corrupted, and that as we pursue what he wants us to be, we will take on attributes that are Christ-like attributes, because those things are not corrupted in Christ and they were in us, but we will also have those things about us that are still what we were intended to be from the very beginning, that are very much our individual being. But all of that always has to be subject to God's design for us and God's intent for us. And when we take it out of subjection to that, that's when we get the individualism that's bad. So you're right that going too far towards some kind of, you know, blanket all being the same collectivist sort of a thing is always going to be really bad. And that's because it's a misuse of that human desire to move toward being what we're supposed to be in Jesus. But by the same token, moving toward too much individualism is always going to be bad, because we need to subject ourselves to God to really be what the best thing we can be.
Subject yourself to God individually. The problem with individuality tends to be where you put it first, and therefore, in order to achieve it, you do evil.
Right. Well, and or raising yourself and your own decision about who you should be above God's estimation of who you should be, above God's design for you, is never going to be a good thing for you. It's always going to lead you to do harm to yourself, because God always knows what you need. And he didn't make you to have, you know, he didn't make you to be in a bad place. He didn't make you to be less than you're supposed to be. He made you to be exactly what will satisfy you and what will fulfill you. And if you pursue that, if you pursue his vision for you, you're always going to end up both being that individual with those individualistic attributes and being, you know, part of the collective that is healthy as members of the body of Christ. But you're not going to end up being, you're not going to end up, you know, committing the sin of Satan and out of pride deciding that you're going to raise yourself above God, and you're not going to wind up in the collectivist sort of satanic cult that leads you to give away all of your individuality to be part of the Borg collective, which is the other end of that, right?
Yeah, that's Eyes Wide Shut right there.
Well, it's, I mean, there have been so many representations of it. The Borg is a really good one from Star Trek, but, you know, so many more. Communism is the communist, the attempts of people to institute communist governments are the most, what would you say, the most glaring examples in reality of people trying to institute that sort of thing. And that's what the World Economic Forum and the left is trying to do to us. But it doesn't mean that that's the only bad way to go. It means there's a right-hand path and a left-hand path in the Gnostic tree, and the right-hand path is the collectivist path, and the left-hand path is the individualistic path, and neither one of them subject to God.
Mm. True.
And so in the myths that we have today, there's, in my opinion, we're getting ready to see a coming dominance of that light path of the individualist path over the collectivist dark path as sort of a false light great awakening for the world to lead them out of this obvious darkness that people are falling into, but also at the same time to lead people away from Christ. And that is a part of the myth that I'm trying to combat right now, where at every step, we as humans need to be connected with and in relationship with the Creator. And if we are not, then that leaves us with it leaves us following an Antichrist spirit. And when Paul talked about Antichrist spirits, there isn't just one Antichrist spirit. There is this spirit that goes into many things that is something other than Christ that takes us away from him.
Okay. Fair enough.
So as far as myth goes, that's where I'm aiming. And that's where I hope other Christians will go too. So, you know, I don't know. Are there any other thoughts that occur to you on this topic? Because I could talk about these things for a very long time, especially if there's interest. But, you know, we have talked about this in the past. What do you think there is that other people would be interested in that we haven't covered in this conversation?
I suppose as a creator, you're in a space where you are trying to build a myth, right? Trying to construct the physical form of it. In that position, I'll ask you the same question that Jordan Peterson asks lots of famous people.
Yeah.
It's sort of in the vein of, when does the left go too far? When do you see that the myth is outside of what your intentions lie? Like, at what point can you see that you've gone too far trying to push culture with the myth and not read culture?
Well, I'm not trying to push culture at all. And that's the key is when you actually, this is a good thing to cover. There are three different things that you want to do as a writer, and one that you really, really don't want to do. And we'll start with the one you really don't want to do, because that's what you just asked, and that is preaching to people. I have zero desire to preach to people, because they get enough of that from the woke left. They get enough of that from the false religions around them. They don't need preaching. What they need is some kind of truth. So the three things that you should do as a writer, the first one is to tell a good story. You have to tell a really great story. That is the whole core of being a creator, being someone who is doing this sort of thing, is to come up with a story that is really good, and that interests people, that draws them in, that they want to follow. Then you have to add some part of yourself into the characters and into the story to make it resonate with people, because that is what attaches us to our stories, is we resonate with that.
Right, and that resonation, the way it was described to me is the beginning of a character is a two-dimensional character. They're a height, they're, you know, an age, they've said something, whatever. That's a two-dimensional character. But then whenever something happens to your character as a reader, expect something out of them because you know that character. That's when they become three-dimensional, and that comes from the human input over time.
Yeah, you put part of yourself into the character as a creator, and it draws people into that character. The third thing, and this is where we get confused with preaching a lot of times, is that if I can take something about real life that is a critical truth, and I can make it a part of my story, that makes something that is timeless. That makes something that is, in a sense, eternal, because it points back to an aspect of God. It points back to an aspect of truth that is eternal.
And I would say the opposite of that would be pandering to the public and telling lies because they want to hear it, whatever it may be. So it's just the opposite of that.
Right. And a lot of times what history tells us is that people who are willing to tell the lies, who are willing to pander to the public, make a big splash in the short run and barely a ripple in the long run. And that people who are willing to tell the truth, who are willing to grab something out of reality that is important and put it into their stories, are the ones who in the long run make waves. They make change. They do important things. The goal is never to preach. It's never to push society. Instead, it's to offer something useful. It's to take whatever experience, whatever value you have in your life, and to offer it up to people in the form of a story, in the form of a myth, in a way that they can access it, and that it can speak to them, and that they can find use out of it, but without preaching at them.
Hmm. We see this all the time right now. I've been paying attention a lot to the video game industry, and we've got a number of large woke video game companies getting in large amounts of trouble with the customer base because pushing ideals that don't make sense to the human psyche. And then on the flip side, a new game, Space Marine 2. But again, the woke press being very much, wah, 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 you can't do that. And the customer base saying, look, we are fighting for our nation and with our brothers and compatriots, and look how good this feels to just be normal. So, right, the forcing falsehood over time, you might get it forced for a while, but eventually the truth will break back through.
Right. And the corollary to that is really you can push society, but only if you want to do it in the direction that the dialectic is already trying to push people. You can go with that flow. You can become part of that wave, right? Because that's
well, what's even worse, and what they can do is they can stand on top of the wave and say, look what I did, even though they weren't responsible for it. That's why I feel.
Oh, sure, sure. And that's what a lot of people do. But if you really want to do something useful, what you're doing isn't riding a wave or pushing a wave. What you're doing is just offering timeless truths in a way that people can relate to. And people don't relate to Chronicles of Narnia the way they did 50 years ago. So hopefully you know, with what I'm writing, I can offer something that people will relate to today and that they will find some kind of identification with, and that it will help them to see the light, to see the way to the truth, who is Jesus Christ. That's the best that I can hope for. And that really is an honorable and good thing for people to be doing. But if you don't mind me closing here, are you ready for that? Are we good to do that? Or is there anything else you have? Okay. So in closing, let's do a couple of announcements at the end of the thing. Let's talk about a couple of things that are going on, because people will be interested. In closing, the thing that I find that people are doing that really makes me crazy is they focus on politics as if it is the answer to their problems. And I'm telling you now, folks, politics is not going to solve the problems. Politics is a rearguard action. We can fight to maintain some semblance of decent governance over us while we are fighting the other more important fights in politics. That is good to do. We do need to be voting. We do need to be, you know, advocating for the correct people, especially in local government. We need to be doing that. It matters. But the more important fights, the more critical things that we need to be, the place where we actually need to be spending our attention and energy is on drawing people to Jesus Christ. And if we do that through stories, or if we do that through cooking burgers and, you know, having a barbecue with people, or if we do that through, you name it, man, there are a million ways to do this. You don't have to do it any particular way. Yeah, sure. There's a million ways to do this. It is whatever your avocation is, whatever your calling is, whatever you're designed to do, that's what you do. And in that, you draw people to Christ through it. That's your mission. And then beyond that, we do what we can to make positive change in the culture, whether that's raising your kids in a healthy way, hopefully homeschooling them if you can, whether that's, offering some kind of positive content for people, whatever it is, those are the things that are actually going to win a battle long term. What's not going to win a battle long term is politics. Don't get it twisted. So if you put all your energy into fighting a political battle, you're going to lose, and everybody else is going to lose with you. And I actually said last night to people that who are in some sense friends, they're not close friends, but I said to them, because you are so focused on politics, you deserve Kamala. You deserve a Stalin or a Mao, because you're not fighting the important battle. You're fighting the surface battle. You're falling to the enemy's traps. You deserve to lose. And that's bad. And we need to change that.
It is quite the mess, for sure. There's not even a Kamala there. There's just a figurehead that's doing something.
Oh, I know. I know. But the idea that people actually deserve that because they've been so distracted that they're not willing to fight the battles that matter is really, it's really disturbing to me. It really bothers me. And I really want people to actually do things that matter, to put their efforts in directions that are going to make change. So that is my message. That is the center and the core of my mission is right there. And that's what we've been talking about, right? So that's what I had for this time. Now, as far as announcements go, I have been working on my schedule for the next few months. And for anybody who's interested, I'm going to be at grocery stores throughout Wyoming and the Front Range of Colorado, signing books and selling books 3 to 4 days every other week, sometimes more.
What was the name of the
rest of the year?
They have an official program. What was the name of that program?
It's the Authors in Grocery Stores program.
Oh, okay.
And it's King Supers is the ones that they're in. And so as part of this program, I can go to these grocery stores and I can sell books and I can sign books and I can talk to people. And I'm going to be doing that over the next few months. And if people are interested, come over to e6universe.com. I have a new website set up with links to the books. And that's the next announcement. But so let me not get ahead of myself. But if you're on my email list, I'll just let people know what's coming up over the next few weeks as I go. And if you're interested in coming out and seeing me and having a conversation, I would love that. I genuinely love talking to people. So if you can make it, that's great. There are going to be some winter markets and craft fairs and all sorts of other things that we're going to be involved in. And so all of that stuff, if you come over to e6universe.com, sign up for the email list. Most of the old email list is still there. But it's all in the new site now. And I'm working on getting that built up. And then the second announcement that I wanted to make to people, and this is the first time I have talked about this in general on Modern Apocrypha, is, and actually anywhere, this is like an announcement. I made this decision like yesterday. I am going to be making my eBooks freely available to everyone. Any eBook of any book I write, I'm making it freely available to anyone. And the same with the audio. I'm actually going to be recording audiobooks as a podcast, one chapter a week or one story a week or whatever, through all the content I have. And I'm going to be doing that just to make my content freely available to anybody who wants to get a hold of it. Now, there's going to be some ads. There's going to be, I have to do some value for value stuff, because in order to make this work, I have to make money off of it. And so if you're able, I sure appreciate it. If you buy a physical book, or if you prefer audiobooks, I'm going to offer a for sale version of the audiobook without ads and maybe with multiple readers. I'm working on that right now. And that's actually really exciting to me. So those are the major
question on that, 'cause that's a first steps thought. There's no guarantees for customers on that one.
Right.
A little cautious on there.
Well, as far as it goes, I'm not putting a whole lot of money into it, but I am trying to create that thing.
Sure.
And partly because I actually have readers who are interested in voicing some of my characters, which is super exciting to me because it means people are interested in what I'm writing. So if you're listening to this and you've read Bright Star or you've read my other work and you're interested in voicing a character or something, let me know, because there might actually be people who are. And then if you're interested in the writing and you haven't read Bright Star or anything, I do intend to be recording a podcast, probably starting in the next week or so, under the Energemetra 6 label. And I will get it up the same as Modern Apocrypha is up on all the podcasting platforms, Rumble, YouTube, everything like that. It'll be a separate podcast and we'll try to link to it or whatever as we can. But, if you're interested and you prefer audio format, I'm going to be doing that. So those are the announcements, and I'm actually really excited. And I'm also working on more book releases. There are hopefully 3 books, 2 novellas and a novel that I'm hoping to release over the next 2.5 months. And I am going to be busy. I'm going to be so busy, but
good, that's times. What's up. Wonderful. Wonderful.
All right.
All right, everyone.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you all next time.
Until next time.